you'll announce council, please.
Okay, please support Ms. Diana Bell, who represents the appellant, and Mr. Lawrence Faust, who represents the athlete.
Thank you. Ms. Faust.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Diana Faust representing Dr. Washington here. This case is, Dr. Washington is one of the defendants in the case that the court previously heard. And as counsel explained, Dr. Toulmin, this was Dr. Toulmin's second supplemental report. In other words, this is his cure report. That he's already been given one extension of time to cure, and this is his last attempt to meet the Section 74351 report requirements. In that context, we would point out to the court that in the Alvarez's response brief, they have indicated that if the court agrees with our issues raised here on appeal, that instead of dismissing the case with prejudice, that they be allowed a second extension to cure, and that's simply not contemplated in the statute. Section 74351C only allows one period of 30 days, and they've already received that. So this court would be required, if the court agrees with our issue and sustains our issue, to dismiss the case with prejudice or remand it back with an order to dismiss with prejudice and to conduct a hearing to determine an award of attorney's fees and costs. In this particular case, Dr. Washington was the last doctor of the six physicians over an eight-hour period of time to render care and treatment to Mrs. Alvarez following her hysterectomy. As the court pointed out, Dr. Toulmin states in the factual in his discussion regarding the nursing home or the nurses that there was an underestimated operative blood loss during the initial hysterectomy procedure. Or that is an allegation that has been made by Dr. Toulmin. The post-operative course, when Mrs. Alvarez is into the post-operative setting, when she goes into and has a reduced blood pressure and she's started giving the pressors, the first doctor starts that procedure, and then it goes forward over a period of 8 hours. Dr. Washington has objected to Dr. Toulmin's second supplemental report on the basis that the causation opinion is deficient. He has the same causation general opinion for all five of the preceding medical physicians who preceded Dr. Washington in their care of Mrs. Alvarez for more than a seven-hour postoperative course. He says the failure to perform surgery or, quote, insist on surgery, quote, sooner, or, quote, more promptly or in a timely fashion to prepare the postoperative bleed contributed to the delay and was a proximate cause of Mrs. Alvarez's death. Now, Dr. Toulmin doesn't define what prompt means. Apparently, according to Dr. Toulmin, it could be any time during that eight-hour period of time. And as this court pointed out in the Astort case, which was mentioned in the prior argument, some more definite point in time needed to have been opined here by Dr. Toulmin. At what point would Mrs. Alvarez, when was the last point in time, in other words, that Mrs. Alvarez would have survived if she had been taken back to surgery? Dr. Toulmin doesn't even address that here. He starts over a seven-hour course and says none of the physicians promptly got her back to surgery. The delay, and here Dr. Washington's delay, from the time he first saw her at 2019, 11 minutes later, he's writing in the chart she needs to go back to surgery. And 12 minutes after that, at 2042, Dr. Allen, the surgeon, orders her back to surgery. The four corners of the report is completely silent about what happened during the hour later to 2200 when she actually gets back to surgery. We don't know what happened. He does not necessarily attribute that to any of the physician specifically. He just says that they're all responsible for not getting her back there before 2200. And because they didn't, that was the proximate cause of her death. Now, Judge Livingston asked a question in the prior argument, well, he does opine in medical probability, and isn't that what he's supposed to do? He doesn't have to address but-for causation. Well, recently, the Texas Supreme Court addressed that very issue in the Jelinek versus Casas case. That was the prior version of the report statute, Section 1301. And in that particular case, Dr. Jelinek argued that the expert who stated that the breach of the appropriate standard of care and reasonable medical probability resulted in a prolonged hospital course and increased pain and suffering was insufficient. The court said, aside from repeating essentially the same phrase twice more, the report says nothing about causation. The court doesn't tell us in this opinion exactly what the breaches of the standards of care opinions were to try to link it all together. The court says he just didn't say anything more on causation. The court says, and this is at star 10 of the Westlaw site that I can give the court, which is 2010 Westlaw 4910172. And we did cite this in our brief, our reply brief. The court says at star 10, the expert's conclusion that in medical probability one event caused another differs little without an explanation tying the conclusion to the facts from an ipsy dixit, which we have consistently criticized. Instead, the expert must go further and explain to a reasonable degree how and why the breach caused the injury based on the facts presented. While we've said no magical words need be used to meet the good faith requirement, mere invocation of the phrase medical probability is likewise no guarantee that the expert report will be held adequate. And there the court held it was not adequate and dismissed the case against Dr. Jelinek with prejudice. Here we have a very, very similar situation in that Dr. Toulmin and, in fact, the appellees responded to our brief by arguing that Dr. Toulmin states in medical probability that this delay caused by Dr. Washington of about anywhere from 12 minutes from 20:30 until the time Dr. Allen ordered that she go back to surgery, or at the outset, at the end of the time period, 23 minutes from 2019 down to 2042, that 23-minute time period, there is no discussion at all by Dr. Toulmin of what happened during that time period. What happened during that time period to change Mrs. Alvarez's outcome? The trial court was required to infer here and make a guess that, number one, at the time, 2019, when Dr. Washington sees Mrs. Alvarez, she would have survived surgery. If she had been taken back, she would have been viable. The trial court had to confer that because there is nowhere in the report that Dr. Toulmin states that. The trial court had to also infer something happened between 2019 and 2042 when Dr. Allen ordered her back to surgery and then it became too late to do anything. Something must have happened during that few-minute time period of Dr. Washington's care that changed the course of her outcome. The report is completely silent. Instead, it says, in medical probability, Dr. Toulmin states that the delay approximately caused Mrs. Alvarez's death. So again, we think under Jelinek, just by use of the phrase in medical probability doesn't get them there.
But to me, doesn't that mean that you're really challenging proximate cause? In other words, the report says that everybody's delay ultimately resulted in this woman's death. So it seems to me that you're challenging, though, which part of the delay or failure contributed to her death.
They had to show under proximate cause under Texas law that something Dr. Washington did or didn't do was a substantial factor in bringing about her death. And Dr. Toulmin doesn't explain under the facts what happened during Dr. Washington's treatment period that was a substantial factor. He doesn't.
He says that what happened was nothing, and that nothing happened was the factor. I mean, he says in the paragraph on page 6 that Dr. Washington noted that she would require a re-explanation, but took no steps to make sure that happened within the next hour and a half. And then on the very last paragraph, on page 7, he says, had prompt surgery been performed, it is more likely than not that the injury would have been easily found and corrected, preventing further blood loss. So I'm just not seeing how those don't tie together.
Well, prompt surgery during 8 hours. What does prompt mean? He says that for
8 hours.
Pardon me?
It means less than 8 hours.
Well, you have to infer that, because we don't know whether, according to Dr. Toulmin, whether at the time Dr. Washington saw her, she would have even been viable if she had gone back to surgery at that time.
Well, but he says that had ordinary care been provided during the operative and postoperative period, in all probability she would be alive. So he does say that.
But in all probability is not enough, according to the Texas Supreme Court under Jelinek, to get them there. They have to tie what happened during that time period. This is like the court in the Foster versus Richardson case out of this court, as well as the Stork. In the Foster versus Richardson case, there was a delay alleged of a one-month period on a misdiagnosis of an ankle injury. And what the expert opined that that one-month delay was the proximate cause of subsequent surgeries, increased pain and suffering, and impairment, and those types of increased injuries. And what this court required was that the expert had to describe what happened during that one-month delay, because there was a prior delay of a period of months before the doctor
at
issue.
That's the distinction between that case and this case. This all happened. Everyone was seeing her multiple times within 8 hours. But in Foster v. Richardson, what happened was the initial doctor didn't correctly diagnose, and then a subsequent doctor didn't correctly diagnose for a month an ankle fracture. So the chances were it was already healed by the time the second doctor saw her. Whereas here, we don't have one doctor, and then that doctor no longer seeing her, and then another doctor, in which case the second doctor would have to link. Here we have multiple people seeing her, multiple doctors, all within this 8-hour period.
Respectfully, Your Honor, Dr. Washington only saw her he was paged at 1945. He doesn't see her until 2019. Dr. Allen orders her to surgery at 2042. This is not a situation where Dr. Allen saw her in prior 7 hours. This is exactly like Foster, because Dr. Allen was the last in line to see her after a 7-hour period. Dr. Washington was the last to see her. Dr. Allen was her surgeon. Dr. Washington is a pulmonologist, not a surgeon, so he could not order surgery or take him back to surgery, which Dr. Toulmin recognizes. He ignores, though, facts that he stated in his report and I have a list of things that he has ignored, the facts that are within the four corners. He ignores, again, Dr. Washington's limited treatment of the patient at the very end of her course in the postoperative period, that the surgeon's order to take her back to surgery was only 12 minutes after Dr. Washington had written the note in the chart that she needed to go back to surgery, which is one of the things he's critical about. He ignores that. He requires, again, the trial court to connect, and this court to connect all the dots, that it was not too late for Dr. Allen or some other surgeon to come in and save her life at the time that Dr. Washington assumed her care at the very end of the 7-hour period. And so without more, the mere statement of in medical probability is simply not enough under Jelinek, and this court's prior opinions in Foster versus Richardson, a Stork. In the Granberry case that we've cited to the court versus Thiel, the court looks at a report that does go through and ties factually what happened during the period of time at issue. The court says this is a sufficient report because it ties it causally. Dr. Toulmin didn't do that. In this case, Your Honors, we have urged that the trial court abused its discretion in denying Dr. Washington's second motion to dismiss. This court should sustain the point, dismiss the case, order it back to the court with an order for dismissal with prejudice and a hearing for an award of attorney's fees and costs.
Thank you, Ms. Faust. Mr. Lassiter, rebuttal.
May it please the court, I'm still Lawrence Lassiter with the firm of Miller Weisbrod. Let me talk about something that Ms. Faust did not talk about in her briefing or in her argument today, which is that Dr. Tuleman identified two breaches of the standard of care of Dr. Washington, both of which he identified as proximate causes of Ms. Alvarez's death. She doesn't talk about the first one, which is not only did Dr. Washington delay and not get her taken back to surgery when he saw her the first time, he continued Ms. Alvarez on the pressors that she was on, which are medications designed to raise your blood pressure, because that was the problem she was having, it appeared. Her blood pressure was down. And not only did he do that, he added another pressor medication. Dr. Tuleman identifies that as a breach of the standard of care, and he does it rather graphically. Let me read from the report. Maintaining blood pressure with pressor agents exacerbates the hemorrhage, much as squeezing a bag of blood with a hole increases the speed of discharge through the hole, hastening, not slowing, the blood loss. Pressor agents are absolutely contraindicated when there is a diagnosis of postoperative hemorrhage. The only way to increase the pressure and salvage the patient is to stop the leak. It is undisputed that Dr. Washington not only continued the pressors Ms. Alvarez was already receiving, but added another one. He ordered the continuation of dopamine and neosinoprene, which I don't believe is a pressor, and added Levofed. That's another pressor. And he says in the report that this violation of the standard of care was a proximate cause. It exacerbated her bleeding. She died because she bled to death. This course of conduct was negligent, contributed to the delay, and was a proximate cause of Ms. Alvarez's death. That's on page 271, volume 2 of the record, where he identifies the pressor medication and adding that as a separate cause. That's a proximate cause, linking that breach by itself to her death. That by itself is a basis for affirming the trial court's order. We have standard of care, breach, and causation right there. Now let's talk about what Ms. Faust wants to talk about, which is the issue of delay. The Supreme Court's decision in Jelinek did not change the law in Texas. An expert is still required to opine to a reasonable degree of medical probability. What the Supreme Court said in Texas in the Jelinek case was an expert can't just say that out of the blue and automatically everything's okay. The expert has to talk about in his or her report a link between the breach of the standard of care that he's identified and what happened to the patient. In Jelinek, they had multiple causes. This is the second case the Supreme Court has done this last year where they talk about multiple causation and an expert not ruling out other possible causes. And what the Supreme Court has said is that when you've got a multiple causation case, different causes that might have contributed to it, you have to at least make some effort to rule out the other ones. The expert in Jelinek didn't do that. So the law hasn't changed on that. We'll talk about the timeline. If you read counsel's reply brief, she repeatedly talks about minutes before she went back to surgery. Well, it is minutes. 100 and some minutes are just minutes. But he made a note in his report at 2030 that he thought, Dr. Washington thought, that she would require re-exploration. That didn't happen for an hour and a half. In his report, Dr. Tuleman identifies the standard of care as the physician is required to recognize that you have a problem here and he deal with it emergently, which I think is doctor speak for you need to do it right now. It's an emergency. You need to do something immediately. Making a note at 2030 that she needs to go back to surgery and then not doing anything about it for an hour and a half is a violation of the standard of care, according to Dr. Tuleman. So it's not just minutes. There's nothing in Texas law that says you have to give a minute-by-minute account of exactly what happened and what the precise moment was that Ms. Alvarez passed beyond the point where she could be helped, where she could be saved. Counsel talks about a number of different cases. I want to direct the court's attention to a decision from 2009 that I think will be helpful. case of Bismar versus Moorhead. It's a memorandum opinion. Justice Livingston, I believe you were on the panel in that case. That's also a case involving of uncontrolled internal bleeding and the failure to properly treat it, and you had multiple physicians in that case. All of the physicians failed to meet the standard of care, which the expert said required immediate treatment of the bleeding. They didn't do that. And in that case, the defendant also challenged the timeline and said you didn't point out when precisely. And this court said in that case, they didn't say you had to provide a specific time, the specific point. I'm not sure you can even do that. You know, when you have a situation where somebody's bleeding out, the court said the report, this is in the Bismar case, 2009 Westlaw 4755197. The report provides specific information as to causation. This is in response to their challenge. The report first states that uncontrolled internal bleeding that results in hypovolemic shock, which is what happened in our case, if not treated immediately, may cause profound circulatory collapse that leads to death. It then specifically states that the failure of Dr. Bismar to take immediate action to control Gloria's bleeding or replace her lost blood when he examined her caused hypovolemic shock, which led to her death the same day. Based on the information contained in the four corners of Dr. Oswald's report, after giving full consideration to Dr. Bismar's challenges, we conclude that the report discusses the standard of care, breach, and causation with sufficient specificity to inform Dr. Bismar of the conduct the Moorheads have called into question and to provide a basis for the trial court to conclude the claim has merit. This case is just like that. He has identified what Dr. Washington was supposed to do under the standard of care, how he breached it, and how it's linked to Ms. Alvarez's death. There is nothing in Texas law that says we have to give a minute-by-minute actual account. If, again, we go back to what we discussed earlier, which is if they want to say that the time period between when Dr. Washington came on the scene and Ms. Alvarez's death, there wasn't anything that they could do, that in fact Dr. Tileman is wrong, they can bring in their own expert, they can challenge our expert on a Daubert Robinson challenge, they can file a summary judgment motion, or we can go to trial and have a battle of the experts. Again, they're asking you to prejudge a battle that hasn't happened yet. All Dr. Tileman is supposed to do is to explain the standard of care, the breach, and the causal link. And he's done that. And he's explained the facts. He's explained how that's linked to what happened to Ms. Alvarez. One other point that counsel brought up on the request for an extension. One thing I'd like to point out, if you'll read the trial court's order, when the judge granted the extension to do the second report, the judge was very specific in saying that he didn't have any issues about the substance of Dr. Tuleman's report. He said the report meets the requirements of Chapter 74, with the exception that the plaintiffs are required to submit an amended report breaking out specifically by name each defendant and or group of defendants and the specific elements relating to standard of care, breach of standard of care, and causation. The judge said, I remember I was at the hearing, he said, I'm going to tell you what I tell everybody. And you can look at the transcript and see how he said it. I'm not quoting. When you have multiple defendants, and what we were doing was aggregating them. Dr. Tuleman was aggregating all of these doctors and said they all had the same standard of care. You need to deal with this now. You need to take her back to surgery. You need to stop giving her medication to increase her blood pressure and make her bleed more. The judge said, I tell all of my plaintiffs this. I want you to break them out for each one specifically and relate them to each of the specific defendants. So that's what we did. The hearing transcripts support that conclusion. In fact, as I argued to the judge, we didn't have to do that. Where the defendants share the same standard of care, you can aggregate them. The case law says that. But he wanted us to do it that way, so we did. If the court is going to determine that this report is deficient, it will be a deficiency that was not identified below. The Supreme Court, in the Leland case, said that a court of appeals, under the plain language of Section 74.351, that the court of appeals can grant an extension when it finds a report deficient. I haven't found any cases that say that you're limited to only one of them. The Leland case seems to indicate that you effectively sit in the position of the trial court when it comes to enforcing 74.351, albeit with an abuse of discretion standard of review. It's not de novo. but it's kind of strange. So I disagree that because there was one extension granted in the trial court that we can't do one here. We believe the trial court did not abuse its discretion in deciding that this report was sufficient, and we ask the court to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lassiter. Ms. Faust, rebuttal.
Briefly, Your Honors, and I'll take the last issue first. The order at issue can be found in the clerk's record at 361 and 362. And the order specifically says, after considering the entire record and arguments, the court finds the report constitutes a good faith effort, meets the requirements of Chapter 74, with the exception that the plaintiffs are required to submit an amended report breaking out specifically by name each defendant or group of defendants and the specific elements relating to standard of care, breach of the standard of care, and causation for each defendant, that plaintiffs are granted 30 days from June 1st, 2010, pursuant to Civil Practice and Remedies Code Section 74-351C, to amend, to submit their amended reports. The court said, otherwise, other than not having the report state specific elements on standard of care breach and causation, otherwise the report was okay, with the exception that, and granted them an extension under 74-351C. The statute is clear. There is one 30-day period expressed in 74-351C, and the court gave, and this can be found at page 362 of the record. That order came orally at the hearing in June, and they actually submitted their amended report on June 15th, so within 15 days of that oral rendition, although the judge didn't actually sign the order until August 15th. So I don't believe that this court can grant another extension under Chapter 74 with the express limiting provisions that the legislature put in of one 30-day period. Concerning the statement that there were two breaches and two delays, that Dr. Washington breached the standard of care in prescribing pressors, Dr. Toulmin does say that he ordered continuation of dopamine, neosinephrine, and added Levofed during the time period of his care and treatment. And that he noted Mrs. Alvarez would require re-exploration, took no steps to make sure that happened within the next hour and a half, and this course of conduct, the whole course of conduct was negligence, contributed to the delay and was the proximate cause of Mrs. Alvarez's death. I think Dr. Toulmin here is combining all that together as part of that continuing delay issue. Nonetheless, we did expressly address both in our brief, and we talk about both in our brief, the delay and the pressors, unlike the statement that we didn't. Now, concerning what happens during this period of delay, and I meant to state this in my opening, and I went right over it. At page 268 of Dr. Which is the 268 of the record, Dr. Toulmin's report, he does say, he does quote from Wake Forest University School of Medicine as what happens during hypotension. He never states that that happened here. Nowhere in this report does he state that any of these resulted in this situation here. No, he also states on page 268, pressor agents are absolutely contraindicated when there is a, quote, diagnosis of postoperative hemorrhage. There was no diagnosis of postoperative hemorrhage factually stated within Dr. Toulmin's report. So those are the standards he's setting out, and then he doesn't apply them factually.
What about the statement right above, on page 3, right above the case discussion, where it says for cause of death was listed as complications of acute hemorrhagic shock?
That was at autopsy. Those were determined from autopsy. At the time of Dr. Washington's care, there is nowhere in the report that Dr. Toulmin states that Mrs. Alvarez had a diagnosis of postoperative hemorrhage at that point in time, such that the prescription of pressors would be contraindicated. Bismar versus Moorhead, I don't recall seeing that in the brief. However, one big factual distinction there is that the report did talk about what happened on circulation collapse. And we don't have that here. We do have at page 268 him quoting from an article, but he doesn't say that any of that happened during Mrs. Alvarez's course to Mrs. Alvarez, unlike the, what was quoted from the Bismar versus Moorhead case. With those responses, if the court has no further questions, I would just, again, ask the court to reverse the trial court's order denying the second motion to dismiss under the statute.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Fowl. Thank you again, Mr. Lasker. We appreciate your arguments today and your briefing. Your case is submitted.